Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on April 7th, 2021. And it's nice to have you here today. We got a show. Actually, we have an article in our magazine, Equity in Access. I'll tell you about that in a second, where you can look at it, all about culturally responsive teaching. And that's what our show is about today. All right, we've got Glendalise Martinez, okay, who is from Curriculum Associates. She's the director of content and implementation for that fine company. And she advises and supports school districts in the planning for and the implementation of cultural responsive teaching practices and curriculum. And this is a really important thing, and I don't want to call it a trend. This is something we have to really dig into, okay? And so I'm so glad Glendalise will be here. We're going to have a nice discussion about the mindset for cultural responsiveness today. As you know, we're real interested in this. We are now the American Consortium for Equity in Education. That's over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. Curriculum Associates is a great supporter of the move towards equity. They work with us continually over there at ace-ed.org. Our new issue of the magazine, Equity in Access, which is an online journal. Okay, and it's really excellent, and I hope you go over to ace-ed.org and check it out. All right, flip through, enjoy the articles. They're really, really, really good. What we're doing over there, we keep all our podcasts over there. This one will be archived there as well. Okay, and all kinds of great information for you about equity and access. We're the only ones that actually focus on those two major things in education. 100%. So please check it out. You're invited to join our consortium. It's all free over at ace-ed.org. If you do that, we'll make sure you get the magazine each time it's published, et cetera, et cetera. So go over ace-ed.org. And I said that too many times. So let's go over to Glendalise. It's spinning. It's spinning. It's spinning. There she is. Hi, Glendalise. How you doing? It's Larry here.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Well, I am just fine. Where are you calling from?
I live in Houston, Texas now.
Houston, Texas. How's the weather in Houston? I'm up here in Maine.
Oh, it's a little funky, you know. 2 days ago it was cold, and yesterday it was very hot and humid. So we're
so you live
now.
In Maine, too. It's the same thing here. Okay. It's just crazy. So Houston, Maine is where you live, like every other crazy.
Yes, that's where I live.
Have up here. Yeah, I'm glad. Thank you for being here with us today. I appreciate it, Glendalise. Houston's a pretty good town, I got to tell you. All right, and all's well. But tell us about your job. That's a nice title. I love that. It's cool stuff. Director of Content and Implementation, okay, for Curriculum Associates. What do you do? Tell everybody about that.
So it's a really fancy name, but Curriculum Associates, what I do is I support all of our school districts across the country in different ways. Sometimes I do keynote presentations. Sometimes I do workshops. Other times I consult. So externally, that's what I do, and then internally, I work with our teams on culturally responsiveness or cultural responsiveness to ensure that we're meeting the mark there, and it's a lot of fun. It's the best job I've ever had.
Yeah, it's the way you describe it, it's a great job. There's a lot of teachers who are salivating right now going, how can I get a job like that? That's really cool. Okay, so it is cool. So watch it. They're after you now. Okay, but it's interesting. You talk about culturally responsive education, all right? And that's a fairly new term. Would you agree with that?
It's not. I think.
That's good. Go for it. Go.
So
good.
So it's not a new term. Cultural responsiveness has been around for more than 25 years. I think that now, because of the shift in the student population being mostly non-white in the United States,
mm-hmm,
I think
mm-hmm.
that it's become a more important topic for teachers to understand and to learn. But no, this is not new. It's been around for many, many years. It's just now picking up steam.
Well, maybe that's what I meant. Okay, the term has been around. Okay, but
yes.
There hasn't been a lot of action on it. All right? And
no,
it's
not at
good
all.
That term is around. But now, you know, sometimes you got to put your axe where your mouth is, so to speak, in terms of the generic here. Okay? And that culturally responsive may have been around a long time. Okay? But now we're finally taking action on it. And actually, there was an interesting
Absolutely.
Article. I was just trying to find it. I meant to look it up just before the show started. I'm going to poke around while we're doing this. There's an article in the New York Times today. Okay, about how the schools of the United States are changing. If you go by, quote, any schoolyard, you'll see the difference in the student population from what used to be an all-white population in public schools to a more diverse population, and certainly the growth of minorities. And the school districts, and you guys have recognized this, have to move in that balance. Okay, and make sure we're teaching people, okay, and engaging people with things that are interested to them. Is that how you would define it? Glendalise, how would you define culturally responsive teaching?
I would define culturally responsive teaching as a method to teach students that really focuses on being inclusive of students' cultures, of affirming their cultures and validating their cultures, so that students feel like who they are is a part of their learning process, right? So, and there are different approaches to culturally responsive teaching, but for me, that's really how I see it.
You're good. I love the way you defined that as a methodology. I think it's just terrific. And here's that article in today's New York Times, everybody, just so you know this. Okay, by a columnist named Thomas Edsall. Okay, and it's called The Fear, get this, that is shaping American politics. All right, and he talks immediately from the National Center for Education Statistics, the percentage of public school students who were white was 64.8% in 1995. Okay, this percentage dropped below 50% in 2014 to 49.5%. They project that in 2029, white students will make up 43%, okay, of public school enrollment. And that means that we have a responsibility to every kid, no matter what color or nationality they are. And we have to change the way we view these things and change our methodology to meet the needs, okay, of these kids. It's not what it used to be. It's different. Am I right, Glendalise?
Absolutely. I talk about that all the time, actually. So, when I talk to teachers specifically, because our teaching population is not a mirror image of our student population in the United States, as I'm sure you know this, Larry, right? So our teaching population is still about 80% white. So it really requires teachers to start to think about who they are and what they bring into the classroom and their experiences, right, as white teachers, to ensure that they're, you know, putting down their bias. We all have it. It's not exclusive to white people, right?
Oh,
everyone
yeah.
carries
Absolutely.
Bias. So they have to put that down and say, okay,
Absolutely.
How can I teach these students the way that they need us to teach them? It's just been really interesting to watch the shift and to see the interest in cultural responsiveness. And more importantly, what I'm going to be interested in seeing in the next couple of years is the shift in the data, if this is the approach that schools take on. Because it is absolutely necessary. And for those districts that are taking this on, we're starting to see some changes.
Absolutely. I could agree with you more, okay? And it makes me sad a little bit that we don't have as many people of color, okay, Hispanic people, Latinx, whatever you want to say in that regard, African Americans, et cetera, Asian American, who are teaching, okay? We need more people of diverse backgrounds in education, and you're right, the percentage of white people as the group changes that we have to work with, we can see it there. It's not good. So we have to do a lot to learn in different methodology. And on that note, before we get into what's going on in K-12, you probably know this, the teacher education programs, are they shifting the way they're teaching and taking cultural responsiveness into consideration as they teach people how to teach?
So I don't know the concrete answer to that, Larry. What I will say is that what you'll see across the country is that there are more urban education programs popping up. across the country in different universities. But I will say, to clarify, this is not just an urban issue,
yep.
right?
Yeah.
So I want to clarify that. But it has
you.
Been extremely it's been relieving to see that there are urban education programs popping up within a lot of these schools of education. But I do know that cultural responsiveness is picking up a lot of steam, and there are authors out there who are also, of course, professors in different universities who are focusing very heavily on cultural responsiveness, like Django Paris and Goldie Muhammad, to name
two. Yeah, old Goldie.
They are both.
Good old Goldie. We love
yes.
Goldie. Okay,
yes.
She's one of
Goldie.
Our champions of equity. She's just great. Okay, she really is. What's the biggest misconception about? I'm going to call it CRT instead of constantly saying the words culturally responsive teaching. Sounds like a medical procedure. We need to send you for a CRT. Culturally responsive teaching. Okay, CRT. What's the biggest misconception? And you go to work with school districts all the time. Gwendolise, what do you hear? Biggest misconception.
So the biggest misconception is that this is strictly an issue of race, right? So folks, when you say cultural responsiveness, immediately say, oh, we're tailoring teaching to black and brown children. While that is true, that is not exclusive, right? So when, for example, if we think about rural kids, rural children still need a different approach because we see data that's coming out of rural districts that looks very similar to data that comes out of urban districts,
mm-hmm.
except we're talking about white rural kids, right? There is a need in those districts. There are funding issues in those districts, just like there are funding issues in urban districts. We're just looking at different types of funding issues. We're looking at different issues overall in terms of the experience of those different groups of students. But cultural responsiveness is not exclusive, is not an exclusive issue of race. So I think for me, that's like the biggest misconception of cultural responsiveness.
I know a lot of people who I talk to on this show who, upon hearing your last statement, would quickly nominate you to have a statue built in Washington of Gwendolise Martinez. Okay, that is great. Okay, and you are just so dead on right. Okay, rural is a culture, and the minute people hear culturally responsive teaching, they think race, and it's not. Okay, that was so well said. I got to thank you for that, and that's really an interesting point, and one that comes up far too rarely. Thank you, Gwendolise. That's great.
You're
I will
welcome.
Contribute to the statue. We can start a GoFundMe page for your statue.
Thanks, Larry.
Okay, that was a good one. Okay, I really mean that. So, you know, when you say that, it's a misconception. I'll call it a prejudice, if I may, because it's prejudging. Okay, not a bias per se, but a prejudice. Okay, and it has a lot to do, and this goes through everything, the educator mindset. Okay, and it is a challenge because, again, everybody has inherent bias. I agree with that. You know, when white people are dealing with people from all these different cultures, okay, different races. Okay, and that sort of stuff. Okay, and or urban educators are working in a rural school district. Okay, it's a whole different thing, and it has to do with your mindset. Okay, as an educator. All right, and boy, that is just so key. Okay, and if I may, a lot of that has to do with the fact that people think that whoever I am teaching, these kids, these black kids, these Latino kids, these rural kids, they can't keep up with the rigor I need to give them. And it starts immediately like that. And you know, I am a firm believer the more rigorous you are with the kids, the more they will rise up to the occasion. And talk about educator mindset and what you're hearing on all this thing. All this.
I agree with you 100%, Larry. So I honestly believe, and I've always believed when I was a teacher and now that I'm in this role, right,
yeah.
that whatever you give students, they're going to meet you at that task. Whatever it is
yeah,
that
they
you
will.
Give them, if you scaffold for them, if you know that it's a difficult ask, right, and you scaffold for those students, they're going to meet you wherever you want them to meet you, right? So this idea that students can't, that is actually more of a reflection of the adult than it is of the student. So when it comes to building out your classroom and looking at your classroom from a CLR perspective, you have to start to think about your own bias. It's really important. Look, Dr. Holly says this, right? He says you've got to put down your you've got to be attuned to your deficit monitor so that you're aware of what your deficit thinking is, so that you are not you're not projecting that onto students. So to me, I think if teachers are going to be honest with themselves about what they're bringing into their classroom, they have to be honest about how they discipline students, who they discipline,
sure.
How they're interpreting culture, what their misconceptions about student culture is, and then build relationship with students in the classroom so that they're learning from the student as much as the students are learning from them, right? And then it becomes like this ecosystem of a safe space for students so that they can all share who they are. And it just it really does help quite a bit when your students feel like they can trust you. That at least that's been my experience as an educator.
It really does. And by the way, you mentioned Dr. Holly. That's how do you pronounce his first name? Shiraki. Thank you. I was going to put a couple L's in there. Shiraki Holly, who is at the Center for Culturally Responsive Teaching and Learning. This guy is an expert on this. Okay, we're going to try to get him onto the podcast here. Okay, because it's a good choice of who to quote there. It's a good one. It's really it's frightening, and I love the way you carry that over into behavior. Okay, and we do again. It's an inherent bias that we all carry. All right, and you know it's just amazing. Talk about the other things involved with this. I only hope there's a lot of people in teacher education who are listening to this, because teacher education really has to step up and talk about how we deal with this, again, because there's a huge changing demographic within public teaching, okay? Not the teaching, but within public schools, okay? We need it to reflect into the teaching, et cetera. So talk about developing relationships with students and the high expectations and all that sort of stuff. Okay. When you talk to teachers about this, what's the feedback that comes back to you on this? What are they saying?
You know, Larry, typically when I have conversations with teachers, they're usually really thankful that they've gotten a little bite of information from me, right? Because I'm meeting with teachers for like maybe 1 or 2 hours at a time. So they're just happy to get a small bite of something that they really want to learn. You know, I think about when I was in grad school, and I was thinking about myself as a student in grad school the other day, and I was like willfully defiant because at one point in my graduate school experience, I was so upset because I wanted to go and student teach in an urban district, and I wasn't able to do that because I couldn't get anyone to observe me in that urban district. And I remember one of my professors.
Where were you going to graduate school?
This was years ago. This was over like close to 20 years ago at Rutgers. So they couldn't get
Rutgers. They would go into an urban district.
So at Rutgers, they would ask different retired educators to go and observe you during your student teaching, and I was told that they weren't able to get anyone to observe me in Newark. So I was I was so disappointed.
Wow. Newark's really New Brunswick. Rutgers is a New Brunswick.
And I don't want to disparage my program because I love Rutgers, but it was the experience that I had, right? So. I was thinking of myself as a student.
Talk about
when I got that information.
Responsive education. Yeah, talk about culturally responsive education. We just summed it up in a nutshell there. Go ahead, Wow.
Well, let me clarify. They've since changed who runs the program, so I just want to share that. So I wasn't able to go into Newark, and I was so disappointed. And up until that time, I was willfully defiant. I was not the best student because I just didn't see myself in that program, right? I know, but then at the same time, I said I forced myself to finish the program because I was like, well, I have to get my master's degree, right? So I get my master's degree, and I remember being told, you know, good classroom, good lesson planning is good classroom management. Well, when I went into the classroom, that was only a part of it. I mean, I still had to build relationships with my students. I had to figure out who they were. There were so many different personalities. So many of my kids had different things going on at home. I needed to relate to my students. You know, I thought it very important to learn all of their names on the first day of school, you know, and it was an experience, right? It was, and I had no clue, right, what I was doing, really, when I was 21 years old teaching. And I would, so, you know, I think about that, and I think about teachers coming into teaching, and in your first year, you're like just treading water. You're trying to figure it out. So I think that having a tool or being well-versed in cultural responsiveness would really help a first-year teacher just to figure out how to build relationship and trust in a classroom, even if they haven't figured out how to teach those students to their best ability just yet.
You know, that's a great point. To build the relationships. Okay, will make all the difference in the world. You may not be the world's greatest teacher, but you can be the coolest teacher in the world and build the relationships and take the time to understand your kids. That's a very, very good point, I got to tell you. You know, you heard me say at the beginning, and Curriculum Associates works with us, with our Consortium for Equity. And what we try to do, okay, is create a place where the industry and the educators can work together so that the right things come out, because that's a very symbiotic relationship between the pre-K-12 educators and the industry who creates all the products and services that they use. Curriculum Associates, your company, Gundaliz, is a prime example of a company that literally backs up what they say. They have and I want you to talk about this. They have the new program called Magnetic Reading, and they built, okay, culturally responsive teaching, CRT, into the program. Okay. Can you talk about that for a minute? Because I think that's an important junction right there. Go ahead, please.
Listen, I'm really excited about this reading program.
Good.
For several reasons, right? one, because it's a great reading program. But two, I did get to sit on a few of the meetings while we were building out this program, and I'm impressed, right? I'm impressed because it's really difficult to find a published book, a published program that is so inclusive of culture and has authentic voices at the level that magnetic reading has. I've taught high school, and I've been in this particular industry since 2006. And Larry, let me tell you, up until this point, I hadn't seen a program like Magnetic. Because when a student opens a book, and is able to see themselves, whether they are a black student in an inner city, or they're an autistic student, or they are a student whose parents own a restaurant, right? Or they're a Puerto Rican student and they see, you know, Pura Belpre in our program, and we share that, you know, she was the first Puerto Rican librarian, very popular in the New York City Public Library. Kids get to see themselves when they open up this set.
Right.
So and here's the thing, right? So here's another misconception, that if we're being culturally responsive, if we're showing authentic literature from other voices, that somehow we're missing the mark on standard. That's not the case. We're not lowering our standard. We're not leveling readers. We're not doing that, right? So the rigor is still very much high. We're still asking students to perform at grade level, but we've designed it in a way that gives access to students who may be English learners, who may have special needs, but then we're also giving students a reflection of what I like to call mirrors and windows of themselves, mm-hmm, or of others who they might not have met within the text. So it's just beautifully put together, and I'm so proud to be a part of it.
It's good. It's called Magnetic Reading. It's from Curriculum
Magnetic
Associates.
Reading.
You know, yeah, there's something else about it, okay? And it is important. I'm just going to use a black kid. For a black kid, okay, to you know, see people who look like them and sound like them and all that sort of thing. But I honestly believe, because I was raised, I'm older than you, on the old Dick and Jane, okay, with their cat Butterball and their dog Spot. Okay, who lived in a really nice suburban neighborhood, by the way. Okay, and that's what I was raised on, all right? And I was not shown, okay, other cultures. Okay, and I went through Philadelphia public schools in the 1950s and 60s. Okay, and to me, the culturally responsive education, and I'll use magnetic reading as an example. When kids of all races see characters and events from all other races, it tends to build a cultural respect, okay, really from day one. And we talk about inherent bias. One of the reasons that we have that is because we haven't been aware of these other cultures. So you make up stuff in your head, okay? That's just the way it works.
Yeah.
All right? You know, so when a company, again, I'll use magnetic reading, when they take the time to show all kids that all cultures matter, and each kid can see themselves in it, no matter what that kid is, that makes all the difference in the world. That makes all the difference in the world. Go ahead.
100%, Larry. And that's another argument that I do like to make, right? Our children, no matter where they live, if the intention is for the children in this country to go to college eventually and enter the workforce, they are entering a very different world than even I entered, right? Their world is so small compared to mine, compared to yours, because they're entering a global market. And in doing so, they've got to interact with people from different countries. They've got to interact with people from different backgrounds.
Exactly.
So it's really important that we're exposing our children early so that it's not like a shock, right? When they go to college and that's the first time, you know, that they see someone from a different culture. Like, I had a friend who I grew up with who came to visit me at Rutgers, and the first time he ever saw a deer was when he came to visit me at Rutgers, and it blew my mind. Because I was like, what? Right?
Wow.
I could not fathom that was the first time he had seen a deer. But that's what I'm saying. Like, what we don't want is for our children to be 18, 19 years old, and it be the first time that they're interacting with someone who has a different background than them. Because that is when we have a situation
it's
where students don't understand one another. Right.
It's not good. I can give an example of that. I went to college at Westchester State, okay, many, many years ago, like you at Rutgers, but even before you were at Rutgers, many years ago, okay, at Westchester State, all right? And most of the students there, the vast majority, were white, okay? And they came from all over the state of Pennsylvania, all right? And most of them had never been involved with a black or Latino person in their lives. Now, and the kids from Philly who were at Westchester, which was, I don't know, maybe 5% or something, who had gone through Philly schools, okay, and had dealt with people from various cultures. When a few black kids went to Westchester, the kids from all over the state were shocked. They had no idea how to react to this, okay, to these kids. They just couldn't, because they knew nothing. They had no awareness of working or dealing with black people. It's not their fault, okay? And I'm talking about many, many years ago. This has changed greatly, okay? But those kids, okay, were going to become the next generation of teachers, okay?
Yeah.
And everybody was missing it back then, okay? It was just one of those things. The more we do what you're doing is making people understand that every culture exists and demands respect. Okay, and we start that from day one, the better off we are. And that's why the teacher education schools have to really step up on this, because the school population is changing, okay? And we have to be aware of this and make sure it works. And I love what you said about rural being a culture as well. I mean, we have to take everything into consideration. It's unbelievable.
I agree. Yeah. You know, fun fact, Larry, I went to a school in Pennsylvania, in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Where? Which where?
No, Hershey School. I went to Hershey School.
I'll be darned. How's the chocolate world?
Yeah.
Man? Yeah.
Yes.
You know, you went to Hershey. Linda Lee's, now you're going to be, I thought that was all boys. Was that all boys at one time?
It was when it was first open. It was all boys and orphans. And then it became girls and boys. And then it became first it was open for girls, and then it was open for children of all cultures. And here I am, a graduate of Martin Hershey School.
Congratulations. So. Are you from Pennsylvania originally?
I was born in New York, and I lived in the tri-state area for a while, but I went to Milton Hershey School for 6 years, so I had a lot of fun.
Wow.
I went to Westchester.
Did you, win a golden ticket inside a Hershey bar like Willy Wonka? That's interesting. That's an interesting thing.
Well,
yeah.
You know, we're talking about cultural responsiveness, and Milton Hershey's a great example of what you can do when you set high expectations for students, because we were all
here.
Mixed up from different backgrounds. So I recommend everyone look it up. Here I am plugging my school, not on purpose, but it's a good example of what you can do.
So I got this straight. New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, you're on I-95 up there. Okay. And now you're in Texas. How'd this happen? What are you doing in Texas? We have to talk.
I moved to Texas because of a job. I was working at another company years ago, and we had a lot going on, and I called my old boss, and I said, hey, do you still have that role open in Texas? And she said, yes.
Wow.
And just like that, I moved to Dallas. I hadn't visited. I just left. You know, I was ready for a change, and I left. But, you know, New York will always be home. Always.
There you go. So I was going to ask you the pizza, the Giants, the Mets. We're still in a good line here. We're good. We're okay.
So I think I ought to leave the Giants somewhere else because I'm not
okay.
A Giants
all right. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
But pizza, yeah, of course. I mean,
like, pizza. All right. Good.
I
didn't want the Northeast to leave you completely, Glenda Lee's.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted a little piece of the Northeast still in you. This is right. I'm Milton Hershey School. Wow, that's pretty cool. But it's amazing when we talk about all these things. You know, it's just amazing, and really, education is good. It is stepping up. Okay, and trying to do the job, and the more people recognize this, okay, the more people like you go out there and talk about it, and the more the companies like Curriculum Associates create the products that are going to make all the difference, you're going to see over the course of time a major, major change. And I think this pandemic coming out of it, we see it as a gateway and an opportunity, as opposed to the horror that it was. Okay, and hopefully we can really make some good changes out there. Okay, it's all good. What do you see in the future here? Do you see good?
Well, I do see good things because we don't have a choice, right? You know,
thank you.
We don't have a choice at this point. I think that, typically you see trends in education. I think this is something that is actually going to become ingrained in education, and I hope it is. It's just something that has to happen because we have students who are asking for this, right? They're like, please give us something that is going to help us, or give us something that's going to include us. And I think that if we don't do it, children will demand it for sure.
It's really great stuff. And by the way, we have a nice article from Curriculum Associates in the magazine. If you heard me say that at the beginning of the show, it's over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. So go read about yourself over there. Okay. All the good stuff you guys are doing. It's really a good article. Okay, you guys are good. All right. We appreciate this. Glenda Lee's, thank you. You do great work out there, I got to tell you. Really thoughtful, good
stuff. Thank you so much, Larry.
Making a difference, and that's pretty darn good, okay? Thank you, Glenda Lee's Martinez. You have a great day. Stay safe, okay?
Thank you, Larry. You too.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, everybody, that's Glenda Lee's Martinez. And Glenda Lees is the director, you got a great job, director of content and implementation for Curriculum Associates. And she talks about culturally responsive teaching practices and curriculum that move school districts towards equity, access for every kid, okay, and cultural awareness for every kid. And it's Curriculum Associates, that new product is called Magnetic Reading. Okay, check that out. All right. And that article in our magazine is great over at ace-ed.org. I think it's on page 26. All right. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. Go over there, see what we do. We're pretty proud of that. Okay, my name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you for listening.